Hello, and welcome to Grace Unscripted, where we share stories of the people in and around Grace Church without any script, just real, raw conversations about life change through Jesus. I'm your host, Audrey Wallace, and today's guest is Ken Huth. Ken Huth has been around Grace for a very long time. You probably see him raising his hands at the front row of any service with his wife and his family. And it was an amazing opportunity to hear his story, his history of how he got here. And one thing that really stood out to me is that God can use anything. God can use dreams to seek us, to pursue us, to draw us close to him. He can use books that aren't even the Bible. He can use friends, old friends, blind dates, YouTube videos. There's so many pieces in this story that Ken shares that are creative, unique ways that God is reaching out to him, reaching out to us. And maybe you're thinking about something in your own life that he's using to reach you or to help you reach somebody else. So enjoy Ken's story and how he now is taking those pieces that God used to pursue him and using it to pursue others. Ken.
Hi, Audrey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We are recording in the morning today, just for our listeners to know. Usually we do this in the evening, so we're a little, are you caffeinated? I'm caffeinated.
I have walked back my caffeine intake.
Oh, good
just
for
recently.
You. Oof. Just how you doing with that?
Okay. Yeah. Gut stuff.
Yeah. Enough said.
We'll just leave it there.
Yes.
It helps the gut.
Yeah.
Not having it.
Well, I'm not listening.
Helps my gut.
There you go. Yes. Okay, good.
I sell jewelry, so it helps my gut.
Happy for you. And I'll leave that there. Cool. Well, thanks for being here. Very excited to hear your story. Now, if we rewind back into the depths of Unscripted, your wife also has a story with us, with our founding host, Ben.
That's right.
So any guest that is listening to this and wants to check out her story, it's definitely out there as well. But yeah, today's your day. So we're going to hear your story. Now, Ken and I know each other through community group and really just kind of being at the Montrose building for years alongside one another. I'm far closer to your wife. We've done all kinds of fun things together. But I'm curious to dig in here and learn about your history. So let's start with the history.
All right.
Did you grow up in Akron? What's your story?
I was born and raised in Akron. I attended Stowe Monroe Falls High School, first grade through 12th, and I graduated in 1999, went to, drumroll, University of Akron. Graduated
keeping it close.
In 2003, and in 2003, I got my first job, still there at a company headquartered in Akron. So still here, plan on being here, retiring here, and I'm just an Akron guy.
Well, it sounds like it shows well, because on all of the interviews that I do with people that have lived all around the world often will say, and Akron is my favorite. I'm not even joking. East Coast, West Coast, other countries, they're like, but really, there's a gem here in Akron that if you were born and raised here, you might not even realize. And I'm always shocked.
Well, I realize it now because as you say that, I'm reminded in 2018, we had met some friends from Mongolia who came to Grace, attended our life group at the time. And I asked, his name was Batmok, and I said, Batmok, why Akron? Because he said he and his wife pursued the graduate program, and they were given a choice of Chicago, New York City, and Akron, Ohio for their graduate, for whatever program they were in, I forget. And they picked Akron. His wife actually got to make the pick because she was up first for school. She picked Akron because LeBron James is from Akron.
Are you serious?
That is exactly, that was her, and she was
someone
laughing.
From Mongolia is driven by LeBron
it's
James.
It's really cool, yep. Yep.
That's so funny.
It wasn't Grace Church. It wasn't, Goodyear. It was LeBron James.
Oh my gosh.
And then my friend Batmook, when it was his turn to do his graduate program, he picked Chicago. He was out of Akron.
Like,
so he was
go.
Not as impressed with, sorry, LeBron. But.
Yeah. Well, cool. So you spent a lot of time here in Akron, never lived anywhere else, never like a study abroad or a...
No. I know the world through the Akron lens.
Okay.
I've seen the world through the Akron lens.
Not a bad lens, I'd say. cool. Okay, so when
traveled
you were...
to Canada.
Well,
I've traveled
counts.
To Canada.
That counts.
That's my international travel.
Niagara?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Windsor.
Ooh, okay. Casino?
The casino, yeah.
Uh-huh. Aha. what else is there to do there? Okay, so in your Akron-based childhood, mm-hmm. what kind of stuff did you do around town?
I was wasn't necessarily a hoodlum, but we did a lot of fishing at the Cuyahoga River. Mm-hmm. But sports-wise, got to play all the sports I wanted, basketball, football, and baseball. But I have retired, hung up my football cleats in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. So I still fancy myself as, you know, when the Browns need a quarterback, I still think about that.
I could still do it. I think I could do it.
But my first love of sport is basketball. Mm-hmm. Still is, but or has been. Haven't been able to play for 2 years because of some blew up my knees.
Oh, but, boy.
Retired now, but, yeah, grew up playing a bunch of sports. Mm-hmm. And lots of fishing on the river and a little bit of shenanigans, but...
Shenanigans, hoodlum, I heard that. Mm-hmm. I think the Ken teenage years is probably...
Statute of limitations has worn out on some of the stuff that we'll...
Yeah.
Say that for another time.
Sounds fun. Okay, so when you were in school, what were you dreaming about for your future? What did you think that you were going to get into as you became an adult? What did you want to be when you grew up, other than the Browns quarterback?
Yeah, so I'll be transparent, right? That's what this is for. So the very first thing I can remember wanting to be as a kid was a professional wrestler.
What? WWF kind
of
stuff?
Yeah, the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
I would paint my face, tie the strings around my skinny arms, and somehow thought I was going to be a pro wrestler.
Okay.
Then it was the quarterback.
Uh-huh. Wait, so the professional wrestler thing, that didn't go anywhere.
No, okay. It didn't go anywhere.
Didn't pursue it or, like, go to a tryout. Did you come up with your own stage name?
No.
Or you just would have stepped in?
No, I didn't really come up with a persona or a character.
Yeah, well, and here's the... I'm going to side note here, and I'm sorry for my own story because this is your story, but I do want to tell you that when I was a kid, I don't remember kids close your ears finding out Santa Claus wasn't real. But I remember the moment I found out that the WWF was not real.
Oh,
I thought all
yeah.
of that was true. And when the Undertaker put the Ultimate Warrior in the casket, yeah. I thought all that was real. And my grandpa disclosed to me that it was all staged and acting. And I was devastated.
Yeah, I can remember my dad always saying, "How can you watch that? It's not real." I'm like, I just didn't care.
Yeah.
I just didn't care. And
entertainment.
It was... You got to remember, there was four channels back then.
True.
And so on Saturday morning,
yes.
when the cartoons were over, there was only wrestling.
Well, do you have siblings?
Not at the time, no. There was my sister and I were raised separately. We were product. Parents were divorced when we were young. So we were raised separately. So I do have an older sibling. We just were raised together.
Yeah.
And then when I was 10, my dad and my stepmom had their son together. So my brother and my 10-year gap.
Yeah, he wasn't quite big enough to be practicing wrestling with you. My brother would always play the Ultimate Warrior. I always played the British Bulldog because he had a dog. It was so cute. And we would jump off the back of the couch like it was the top rope, and we would wrestle in the house. That was always fun.
It's funny you say that. Even though there was a 10-year age gap, I did wrestle. And I did body slam, pick him up, toss him around. And then I realized as he got to be like 7 or 8, I was 17, 18, like, this kid's going to be bigger than me when I got to tone this down. And,
That's so fun.
Yeah, once I realized one day he's going to be able to pound my face mm-hmm. and I'm going to knock them.
Yeah.
I knocked off the body, or cut off the body slamming.
That's funny. Okay, well, that was a sidebar that I loved. So when that didn't work out, what was your next vision
for
your future?
Yeah, so from wrestling to pro quarterback, thought maybe I could play basketball, but then I really, you know, couldn't touch the net, so I didn't think I'd make it far in sports. But when I got serious, I really enjoyed writing, telling stories, and I really fashioned my writing style after Terry Pluto, who I've actually seen attend Grace over the years. Got me into wanting to be a journalist, specifically for sports. Ended up majoring in communication at University of Akron with the pursuit of news writing.
Mm-hmm.
Did an internship, and that's how I actually got to meet Mr. Pluto at a high school event, which I remember. He's no chance he remembers that. Mm-hmm. But it was really cool for me to meet somebody I looked up to and modeled mm-hmm. my style after. And then to see him in church he does a faith column. This isn't a plug for Terry Pluto's work, but... he does a faith column, so he attends churches. And I remember, even before I was a Christian, I was only been a Christian for 18 years, but reading the sports articles as a kid, I remember seeing the Faith in You articles that he would write and just kind of, oh, okay, flipping past them.
Yeah.
But then when I became a believer, I started to appreciate mm-hmm. what he had to say and mm-hmm. what he wrote, not just about sports, mm-hmm. but I modeled my style after that. And during my internship, two different times I was physically threatened by people, will not say their names, of course, but realized that, man, $20 an article is not something that was worth my life or livelihood. So mm-hmm. Good thing I minored in business and I can mm-hmm. merge those two yes. fields. And I remember specifically at my cousin Jesse's graduation party. He's about a few years younger than me, just hanging out, and one of the attendees, don't even know, it wasn't family, but somebody there asked me, you're in college, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I had already come to finish my internship, done the internship mm-hmm. thing, and I'm like, I just want to have a good job with a good company and do good work so I can provide for a family, and that's all I care about. And I was not a Christian, was no idea what I was asking for. I just knew, and I just, at that point, I did not want to be the cause of a broken home.
Mm.
And that guy was asking me that. I remember the look he gave me. He was kind of incredulous. Like,
yeah.
Don't you want to be a wrestler or a quarterback or something, like something cool? You just want to work at a company and provide for a family. And even, so back then, why, that's stupid.
Right.
That's what I want to do.
It's probably what the American dream should be.
Yeah. I mean, it was. And so here we are. I've been working at the same company for 22 years. It's a good company. I'm going to withhold the name. Just I'm not here to promote them. But
that's awesome.
That was realized. Yeah, that was realized. I still would. I still use the journalism stuff in my role. So it's really neat to see how those skills, I didn't lose the journalism or the news writing. Mm-hmm. In my role now, I have learned to make a sentence very, very meaningful so that there's very few words but a lot of meaning. And I think
communicate all the time in any form of work, for sure.
And so that those skills have not been lost.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So it's interesting because that wasn't like a prayer necessarily. It wasn't like, this is what I want to ask God for. It is a statement, And you mentioned you did not grow up with faith, anything like that. So was it like you didn't know about God, or you had somebody introduced you what was that like?
Well, as a child and, can't remember the ages, but I remember being with my grandparents some on Saturdays, and we would I would be taken to the St. Bernard's was in Akron, downtown Akron still. They're a beautiful church. There and a couple other ones. I can't remember the names, but I remember going there as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't in any of the classes or anything, and I don't remember my dad ever saying, we're against that. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't something that he was into. He never, he taught me he taught me the value of a dollar. I remember that lesson. Learned that when I got caught stealing a bunch of stuff. So he didn't teach me the Ten Commandments, but he taught me, you don't steal. You work, and then you eat. You work, and then you eat.
Mm-hmm. So moralistic versus biblically based.
Absolutely. But it wasn't, hey, I'm going to teach you these because this is what God said. I'm going to teach you this because this is just
the right thing to do.
Yeah. So
to be a good person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I lost the thought.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about how that then circled into your life. So you're in college, you're dreaming about what your future career is. This guy asks you at a graduation party. You eventually get into a company, which of course at that point you didn't know you'd be there for over 20 years, but you're just kind of getting into work and curious to see how this path did intersect with Jesus down the line.
Yeah, so I wasn't raised in the church, as we said, but we had a little bit of experience. So I knew, being as a kid in the Catholic Church, that guy on that's nailed to that cross, there's something different about him. There's something important. I just didn't care. Mm-hmm. I wasn't taught to care. Mm. We just didn't care. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, I can't remember any specific time anybody saying, "Hey, who is Jesus to you?"
Yeah.
In high school. But I do remember one Christmas Eve. I was a senior in high school. My girlfriend at the time, we were both in high school, and my grandmother said, "You Christians need to get to church Christmas Eve." Mm. And so we went to church. We went to, I can't remember what it was. I can't remember which one it mm-hmm. was. But there was, I remember standing in front of one of the stained glass windows with that guy nailed to that cross, and it said "Inri," and I had never seen that before. And I asked an usher, "What does Inri mean?" And he was annoyed with me.
Mm.
He looked at me like I asked a stupid question, and I just turned and left. I'm like, all right, it's the King of the Jews. Okay, well, if you're going to talk to me like I'm an idiot, then right. I'm not going to ask follow-up questions, because I'm interested. I was interested in what's the sign say?
Yeah, that's literally like evangelism 101.
What does the sign mean? Yeah. So even if I remember the name of the church, I would not say it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the name, and I just remember being, all right, whatever. I had an inkling of interest,
yeah.
and don't have it anymore. That was like the one time I expressed any interest at all. And I can't remember what year I was in Humanities 101 or Humanities 1 at the University of Akron. But I got an A in that class. And they taught, I remember, I got it right on the test, too, that Jesus was put down because he was just too politically powerful. He was murdered because, I mean, the crowds he was attracting, it was just too much.
Mm-hmm.
So just filed that away. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. And
wow. And how many college kids did the same thing and moved on?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I guess squash the rebellion. That's a Star Wars quote. Squash the rebellion in one sort of
and, noted.
I remember getting, like I said, getting A in that class. Mm-hmm. So I'll get my train of thought here. That was about it. That was the only interaction with Jesus. I remember seeing the guy with the bullhorn on campus, just kind of walked around and didn't engage. I'd get away from that guy.
Right.
So that's about it. From as I think about religious or Jesus interactions in my life, that, as far as comes, that's about it.
That's all I have to say about
that's
that.
That's all I have to say about that.
Wow. Okay. So you're in your 20s. You're getting your job.
At least early on.
Yeah. So then you said 18, and I'm not going to do the math of how old you are now and work backwards, but like, when did that transition start for you?
So after I graduated from University of Akron 2003, my girlfriend at the time and I, we discovered that we were pregnant. How'd that happen? And I had, early on in my childhood, I remember making a vow that I was not going to have a broken home. And here I was, where we got to make a home now. We found ourselves, we got to make a home now. Whoa, this wasn't, we didn't really plan this out, did we? And I remember I was treated very, very kindly by my daughter's mom's parents. And they, man, when we had to break the news, I was expecting condemnation. I was expecting hellfire and brimstone. I mean, because they were Christians.
Okay.
I mean, they were Christians, and I got their daughter pregnant. And they were kind, compassionate, forgiving, welcoming.
Wow.
Upset. What are you guys doing? And they didn't say that. Maybe in their frustration, I was not sinned against. I was offered salvation. I was handed a Bible, but not thrown. The Bible was not thrown at me. It was invited into.
What a difference in those two statements.
Oh, absolutely.
Interesting. And it's how you received it, too, because perception is part of that.
Well, I rejected. I didn't care. Okay. I accepted the book, mm-hmm. and then never. I actually did open it and got confused with the language, mm-hmm. And closed it and never yeah. opened it again. I shouldn't say never open it again. Hold
sure.
that thought.
Yeah.
So it was. I looking back, I was treated Christ-like wow. when I deserved otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was another interaction, but mm-hmm. I'm not interested in. And I remember the church leaders came to my house that family was a part of, and I didn't appreciate it at the time, getting mm-hmm. my door knocked on when I was trying to eat dinner and mm-hmm. telling me what a great need I have.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't appreciate that. Thanks, but no thanks. Please mm-hmm. leave. And it wasn't until that relationship, which was built on sand, fell apart mm-hmm. Because I had no interest in Jesus,
mm-hmm.
no interest in really even caring for my daughter's mother, all about caring for my daughter, but
yeah.
there was no love for Christ, no love for her mom. It was mm-hmm. only love for self.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was in the position of causing a broken home that I had vowed never to mm-hmm. be a part of. And so it's not fun to think about, but the dark times, the dark period, the dark ages
yeah.
of, boy, just, this isn't what I was supposed to do. This is the exact opposite. What a loser.
Wow.
And I remember on a call with my daughter's mother, and I made the comment of, if I can't raise my daughter, there's no point in living. And I can't remember what she said, but she called my sister, who then immediately drove over to my house mm-hmm. and made sure that nothing happened. I was like, and I just made a comment. I don't know what I don't know what I had in mind or what I didn't have in mind. And I also had an incident around that same time where I was consumed far too much alcohol. I had a problem abusing alcohol during those times. Pulled into the garage, kept listening to the radio, shut the garage door, and as my head hit the window, I realized that I was in a garage closed garage, and shut the car off mm-hmm. because I thought of my daughter in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't intentional. Yeah. I was saying stuff like, if I can't raise my daughter, what's the point yeah. of living? And then almost accidentally killed myself because I turned the car off. I wasn't.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, I don't know that I said it.
Yeah.
I said it. I put it out there. But I said it in frustration. And it was like exhilaration or whatever that word. Not exasperation.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever. But it almost happened. And then that was, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm still here. But in an effort to save the relationship with my daughter's mom, I was attending counseling at Dayspring, which I didn't know was, I don't know if it's Christian counseling, but I'm pretty sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, the counselor, I forget his name, he recommended, in the work we did, but he recommended getting involved in a church. And I said, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. So yeah, I assume it's that's why I assume it's Christian counseling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good advice for a Christian counselor.
And maybe it even says in their sure. their website, I don't know, sure. whatever. But so there, after I found myself in a position that I vowed to never be in,
mm-hmm.
Jesus started to show up in a couple of ways, but I still had no interest. At work, my performance was suffering, and my manager at the time, who not going to say her name, but she attends here now,
mm-hmm.
and she asked me about Jesus, and I said, "Well, I don't doubt that he existed, but there's no way he, you know, has any interest in me after
oh, wow.
what I've done." And I think I don't know what she was thinking, but she knew that my performance was asked what was going on. I told her all the details. And that's when she entered, you know, mm-hmm. at least brought up Jesus to me. And
mm-hmm.
nah, thanks, but no thanks. And so somehow along the way, somewhere in that time frame, I had a dream. Mm-hmm. And in that dream, I was running through houses in a neighborhood I didn't recognize, mm-hmm. running through house after house after house after house, looking for something. And I finally came into a room where there was a mom who I either had met once before or was just imagining. I can't remember if I had ever met her in flesh or not. To this day, I just can't remember, but I think I did. I had abused a lot of alcohol and a lot of other stuff in those days, so there's a reason memories are cloudy. But this woman in this dream, she was sitting at a table. She said, "Find Katie, find Katie, find Katie." And I remember waking up thinking, well, that was weird because I hadn't thought about Katie in a long time. This was a girl that I had worked with in an internship in high school.
Wow.
And she was cool, and she actually talked to me, man. Dumb and dumber. So I just, I think we went on a couple of dates or whatnot and went our separate ways, college years. One day I was walking through campus and I didn't almost get hit by a car, but I stopped because there was a car at the cross and it was her.
Oh, wow.
And so, that serendipitous where you recognize somebody, twinkling of an eye, oh, hey. And then I remember she gave me a ride to my car and we hung out a time or two and went our separate ways again.
Uh-huh.
So it was really weird that I had this dream of find Katie. Okay. I mean, I liked her and all that stuff, but so it was a while before who would want to reconnect with somebody who now has, a broken home and nobody's going to want to be a stepmom in their early 20s. Come on. So I had all that in my head.
Wow.
And eventually I did call her from had a phone number memorized. Still do, which is weird. Still do.
Hey, that was a skill we had back in the day.
Absolutely.
We could memorize phone numbers.
Of all the stuff I've forgotten, I can't forget that number. It's really weird. And anyway, I called her from a fax machine, though, because I was just such a loser.
A fax machine. When was the last time you heard the word fax machine?
I couldn't tell you. But I called, and just, I don't know why I thought it would be a good idea to call from a fax machine, but as soon as I heard her voice, I hung up. She called back and would have heard the fax machine sound. So I don't really know what I accomplished other than, the number's still hers.
Yeah.
Like that was all I got. Must have been all I was really interested in. The number's still hers.
I'd love to hear Katie tell the side of the story.
Oh.
That would be so funny.
I haven't seen her since. We'll get to the story. But so I can't remember how long it took me for her actually to call her back since I knew the number worked, but it was a while. Finally did. I know I had some, I was trying to do, find a date on a couple sites too, mm-hmm. the can't remember, Matches or whatever. So just trying to put myself in a place to find a mate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a while. I can't remember how long it took, but I finally called her. I remember I bought Cavs tickets. That was back when LeBron was here. The first tour, LeBron's mm-hmm. first tour. So it was super exciting, hot tickets to get. So asked her if she wanted to go to a Cavs game with me, and we did. We had a great time. And probably talked a little bit, had a few other dates or whatever. It was times out. And I remember I invited her to, it was a big time Oscar De La Hoya fight. Any boxing fans? we were having, there was a house party for the big De La Hoya. I think it was De La Hoya. So yeah. Saturday night we got a date, right? Yeah. She calls me the night before on Friday. I was in the middle of a poker game, big time poker game. And I gotta take this, and she says, "Yeah, I got some great news for you." I'm like, "All right, great, yeah." I got a date lined up for you tomorrow night. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm picking you up. We're going to we've got the De La Hoya fight." Well, it's with somebody else. I double booked.
What?
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I said. And just double booked. You think you're here with somebody.
Yeah.
Just gosh. That. I mean, it's fine. So,
to hear double booked in a dating context versus a business context is a completely different thing.
That's funny because we get, I'm literally double booked right. at 9:30.
Yeah, so. Me too.
So we, I didn't know what to say then. I don't even remember what I said. It was like, okay. Wow. I don't remember what I said, but I remember I did not win that poker game.
A little distracted at this point. Yeah.
I did not win that hand or that game. And she said, though, I lined you up a date, and she's hot. I remember that. She said she's hot. She's hot.
Consolation prize.
And I'm like, okay, whatever. I mean, I really liked you. I wanted to see where things go with you, but whatever. And she, I'll say she hounded me for a few days. You got to call her. You got to call her. You got to call her. I finally did. And I can't remember if I texted it. I think I had to send her a text message. I said, hey, Katie gave me your number. You want to have a conversation? I forget exactly mm-hmm. what the message said, but I know it was a text first. And then we spoke, and I love the sound of her voice. It was the sweetest sounding Aww. Voice of all of I've ever heard. And great conversation of, oh, wow, she sounds hot.
Oh, my gosh, I'm picturing her hearing this right now. I'm sure she's heard this story before.
Yeah, but yeah, she sounds hot, and she said really sweet things. She has a 18-month-old, and she was, her story is her story, and we got into the high level of it, and oh yeah, this isn't somebody who just hops from relationship to relationship. This is somebody who, it's kind of like me looking for somebody to share life with, and that's all I was doing. I didn't know there was something more. So we went. We liked the sound of each other's voice. Decided to meet up on a first date, blind date, and yeah, it was great. We had a really great time. Another two or three dates, and then I got a call from her. It was actually after I went to Windsor for a bachelor party, and there was a gentleman's club where some of the party had migrated to, and I had referenced that, and so that triggered so who is Jesus to you?
So you were telling her on a call about that part of a bachelor party, and she asked you who Jesus is to you.
Yeah, so who is Jesus to you? And I said, oh, yeah, well, I know he's murdered because he was getting too powerful, and, well, that's not what I believe. And okay, and she talked a little bit, or I can't remember any specific details of what she said there. But the conversation moved to, well, I will not be with somebody again who is not a believer in Jesus. And I said, well, that sucks.
Oh, wow.
I said, but I'm a good person. I remember saying that, but what do I need that for? I remember saying, I'm a good person. What do I need that for? Because I remember now, I was a single parent who only cared about myself and my daughter. I cared about my daughter. And I think I had given like $10 for her to get a new shirt or something. So that made me a really great person. Oh, I was feeling really good about myself because, I took care of my
above
daughter.
Above and beyond,
I'm a great person. I mean, what do I need Jesus for? And she said, yeah, we're not going to see each other again.
Okay.
And I said, before she hung up, she specifically referenced a book called A Purpose-Driven Life. And she said it helped change her perspective, I believe, and thought it would help me. And I said, okay, see you later. Now I'm going to go read a book.
Yeah.
So that night after I hung up, my uncle and I were going to the Indians game anyway, and I tossed in my keys and don't remember the rest. And that's how I dealt with situations. And a couple days went by, and that question of who is Jesus haunted me.
Whoa.
Haunted me.
That's a good question.
Yep. Yeah. It was. I say haunted because, I mean, I was doing everything I could to distract myself from answering that question. And I remember, because she said of the purpose-driven life, I went there. I know, remember earlier, I was handed a Bible. Yeah. Didn't go there. I went to this person, or to the book this person referenced. And in the very first sentence of this book, this isn't a plug for this book, but this book points everyone to Jesus. And the first sentence is, it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
And the first chapter ends with the scripture quoting Luke 23:34, Father, please forgive them, for they know not what they do. So this guy that's murdered is praying for the forgiveness. It's going to make me cry. He's praying for the forgiveness of those who murdered him. They left that part out. They didn't tell me that.
Yeah, Humanities 101.
Humanities 101 did not have that in the syllabus.
Yeah.
The curriculum.
Right.
And in that moment, I said, well, if he's praying for the guys that murdered him, I want in on that. That's what I'm looking for, is that forgiveness right there, because of, you know, just simply breaking the vow. Keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking the vow, not being a cause of a broken home. And in that moment, that's when I said, I'm in with this Jesus guy, because I knew he was important. I just didn't care. Well, now I care, because he prayed for the forgiveness of those who murdered him.
Mm-hmm.
And come to find out, he wasn't murdered. He allowed it to happen. And then, so that's over the course of 18 years, come to find out. But I read that book, the book Purpose Driven Life says read a chapter a day.
Mm-hmm.
I was burning through it, and it didn't take 40 days for me to finish it. I remember late that weekend, I was here at Grace Church because I drove by it all the time watching it get built, and it didn't have a sign that had some slogan. It didn't have a bunch of stuff that I was afraid of, I guess. I don't know. It just looked like a place where I could come in and hear about this guy, Jesus, and just kind of hide in the background.
Okay.
But Pastor Ryan's wife was here. Funny story. She knew me back from grade school.
Still,
and she saw me walk in and say, oh, I'm so glad you're here.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was supposed to hide and learn about Jesus quietly. And like my first time or two here, I get spotted by somebody I didn't know anybody here. I thought I could just, and I have never left the church. This church, this building that we're sitting in here is the home away from us, the spiritual. This is where I have grown to know who the Savior is. Through teaching on the stage, but the teaching on the stage, I was in the book consuming the word to make sure that I could understand what the teaching on the stage was about. So it's not the teaching on the stage that fed me. It was the teaching was motivating me to read about this guy who forgave the ones who, as I was still unlearning, murdered him. I just could not get over that. Pray for the forgiveness.
It's interesting, like, those guys did murder him because of political power, but he was not murdered because of political power. Like, that paradox is a little hard for Humanities 101 to cover in a semester.
Fair,
but
I hadn't thought of that.
But, yeah, like, they set out to murder him because of political power, but he was not murdered because of political power. That was the plan all along. All the way through the Old Testament.
I see it now.
Yeah.
I see it now.
There's references. It's the fulfillment of prophecy.
I had no idea then.
Right. So that was true. That question, what you answered, was true. You didn't do anything wrong. However, the layers and the infinite wisdom of God is far different from that, because of the intention and the long-term plan from the moment of first creation to the end, right, that Jesus stepped into that space knowingly, willingly, and full authority and power to have stepped out of it, but didn't. And that had nothing to do with if the political powers wanted to murder him or not.
I didn't know that then.
Completely separate things. So that's 18 years ago. So that's what, 2008-ish?
Yeah, well, it was 07 was when we, when all of that, you know, find Katie dream, meeting, the going on the blind dates. So
then, how do you re-engage with Sarah here, where you're like, all right, thanks, but no thanks. Go and actually follow her
somewhere, I don't remember what chapter it is, but somewhere in Purpose Driven Life, it says, hey, if anybody you know, who share Jesus with you, or follow up with them, tell them.
Dang.
And so I did that. I did that with her, and I did have a moment with my daughter's mom's dad, who gave me the Bible and treated me with Christ-likeness when I didn't even know what Christ-likeness meant. I knew, like, this guy isn't pounding my face in. Why? And he didn't even say anything mean. He didn't even say anything mean. I still can't get over it. He didn't even say anything, even the judgmental, because Christians are supposed to judge me, and he didn't even judge me.
Wow.
So, yeah, I had utmost respect for Mike. So re-engaging with Sarah, the books that follow up with a person who shared Jesus with you. So I did, and I said, I remember in my message, just brief message of, you served him well. You served him well. And she just, we had some email correspondence. And I don't remember specifically, like, when, but she's the one who asked if she wanted to meet again. So I wasn't chasing her down. I just was following what the book said. I'm very good at following instructions if I trust the instructor. And I did that. And then she followed back up with me. And she'll say she saw the change over time. But the change would be learning. I can remember learning, having the conversation of waiting until we're married to engage, to consummate the marriage. Let's wait till we're married to consummate it. And that was, I'm already impure. What are we talking about here? It wasn't, no, we got to do this. I just don't understand what we're doing here. And she helped me understand what being made new meant. And so then, so just starting, like, learning. So in some ways, like, she was one of the first people to disciple me, which is not recommended, but just from I'm in, what do I do now? I'm reading the book, and
but you had to undo a lot of worldly wisdom that you had been living by.
And early on, she gave, and I remember telling her, I got this Bible, and I just, the words are weird. New King James Version, the Passion versions, but it just didn't register. So she gave me a copy of the Message, and I just ate it up.
I read,
Pastor Jeff, I remember, he still says it to this day, just start in John. So I remember opening that Message up, finding John, and reading it over and over again. And I can remember, it's chapter 4, the woman at the well, so you never go thirsty again. I want to love people like that.
And be loved like that.
Sure, but I was thinking of still selfish, of still thinking of how I'm going to how I'm going to relate to people. So I'm going to relate to them this way. And still selfish. But anyway, looking at the way that the Jesus interacted with people through the Message and language that was just plain to understand, that is what started, or I'll say where the life change came from, of reading stuff like, whoever puts my words into practice will be blessed. Okay, so I need to do what you say. Starting to put that into practice. And it wasn't until we progressed in our dating relationship, and then we decided that we were going to get engaged. And that's when I started to get formal discipleship here through one of the pastors, when we did the premarital stuff.
Okay.
And that's where I really started to unlearn and understand for the first time stuff like what being made new really means. If we have the slate's been wiped clean, don't go tarnishing it up again, kind of a approach.
Well, you are getting discipled now through premarital. You guys are making a decision to get married. And you're obviously now both going here. Did Sarah go here already?
So Sarah and I, she lived in Solon. So what made the blind date thing so, to rewind, what made the blind date thing so, I'll say a God thing, but so, what's the circumstantial, coincidental?
Orchestrated. Divinely, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. Knowing that now.
Yeah.
Look, in hindsight. So the Katie was, like, she was Akron. She had recently, she was moving, relocating to Solon, and went into a salon without an appointment and was put with Sarah, who they got to talk. So Sarah just happened to not have to have an open, didn't have anybody scheduled. Katie walked in and they got coincidentally matched together. Mm-hmm. And during the, that's when they had their exchange. That's when the the exchange happened.
Wow. Which, as we look at God's plan, we know, like you said, is not coincidental.
No coincidence. No coincidence.
An eternal plan there.
So just that divine appointment that they had, that those two had to meet. But all I could see, we could say all they would have met, but if I hadn't called Katie with that dream of finding Katie, then I would have not been entered into that equation.
Right.
And so that's how I know in hindsight that God literally spoke to me in a dream. And in my 18 years of consuming his word, it's basically in every book that he consumes, he communicates to people in dreams.
Sure.
I'm exaggerating there. I haven't done the exact survey of how many 66.
Right.
I have God talking to people in dreams.
Yeah, so he's like orchestrating in your life while also orchestrating in Sarah's and Katie's. We could take all three of your unscripteds and layer them on top of each other,
that'd
your stories,
cool.
You know, and like triangulate that. And that is something that only God can do. He can, only he can look at birth to however old each of you were and say, you know what, I'm like, you use the word divine appointment, like I'm going to make sure all these things happen simultaneously.
Isn't that cool?
Like that's not accidental.
No.
You know, it's just like creation. Like it's not like, okay, this these things like happened in a swampy marsh, like this, it was intentional and it was
so cool,
created on purpose.
I did not know that then. I just was following the waves.
Right. Well, and you did. You took your part to take action in those areas, to get the book, to read the book. It sounds like even reluctantly in most parts, a little C.S. Lewis-like, right? Well, I'm just going to see what this could may or may not be. Curious.
Those words are alive.
Yeah.
Especially the red ones.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So then how did you grow to the maturity that you're at today as you and Sarah, you know, obviously got married and
she said yes.
Built your family together.
Yeah. We were quickly a blended family. We each had one. And my daughter, when we got married, I think she was 4 and Heidi had turned 2. So we were just immediately a blended family and a blended family at Grace Church, though. And we are going to be launching very soon a blended family connect group where we want to be able to share with people the experiences we've had. And there's a lot of joy and there's some stuff that we can just share with people that is the opposite of joy that leads to joy if it's handled in a Christ-like fashion. So that's what I'm excited about some lows that we've learned from. That we can transparently share with whoever God draws to that group later this fall. There'll be some.
That is such a good statement. Things that are the opposite of joy but can lead to joy if they're handled well. That's like a tattooed on your arm kind of statement. I love that statement. Things that are the opposite of joy that can lead to joy if they're handled well. That's so true across so many places of our lives. Family relationships, work, friendships, your own forgiveness of yourself. That's a good statement. Thanks.
That's the resurrection, though. He's in the tomb. It's over. He's in the tomb. A couple days later, a whole different game. So that led to joy. I mean, that's what... He can redeem anything.
Yeah.
He can literally, he's literally redeemed stuff that I didn't think could be redeemed in my life. Like my own purity, for example. Mm-hmm. Like my own, I'll say thoughts. We're still, I still don't think every thought like Jesus would. But I'm, the point is, I've just consumed his word and I still don't think every thought isn't his. Mm-hmm. But the words that come out, man, I don't think I say as nearly as many horrible, dumb, mm-hmm. ignorant things as I used to mm-hmm. because of his wisdom. And mm-hmm. those words are alive. I keep saying those words are mm-hmm. alive. And I just want everybody to consume, mm-hmm. especially the red ones.
Mm-hmm.
At least my Bible, they're red. Mm-hmm. The message are not red. I've since switched to the NIV.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Jesus' words, His words, of course, his spirit, but his words have literally changed my life because it did what they said.
That's so good. Not because they were written and not simply because you followed them. Those are two separate things, but when combined together, he wrote them for you and you didn't just read them and think they were nice words. That, you know, like the humanities class, sometimes people might say, he was a good guy with good teachings.
He's a good teacher.
Exactly.
Very good teacher.
So not only do you read and follow them just because it's good, you follow it because you're fully sacrificing your life and putting your trust and hope and control and power into his hands, albeit imperfectly and not with not as consistent as maybe I'm guessing, but his infinite and almighty, all-knowing, all-powerful wisdom, creation, power, might, and then your submission to that come together to be the life change. Not just you read the words and not just he wrote the words, but like the collision of those two things together.
James 1:22, it's just one of the shortest verses and it's so good. Don't read the word and deceive yourself. Do what it says. And the do what it says is what I've been.
Yeah.
Like, that's the new vow. Mm-hmm. He said it, I do it.
Mm-hmm. I even think about your experience that you keep saying that they, you know, when you share that you were pregnant, that man showed you grace and goodness and kindness. So he did what it said too. And so
Absolutely.
That's a model that was set before you to say, okay. Like, he could have read it and used it to judge, and instead he read it and did what it said.
Absolutely.
Not just the knowledge, but the action. So putting that into action is a critical part of it, you know, living it out, not just reading it to puff up oneself and knowledge. It's to actually go and do.
Amen. That's been my, that's the epitome of my last 18 years, albeit imperfectly,
mm-hmm.
but doing what the man said.
Mm-hmm. And as he did.
More and more like him each day. This mm-hmm. is the goal. I got a little, I didn't get nasty yesterday, but I could tell my brow was furrowing in a meeting. I'm like, well, I just pictured Jesus correcting people with a flat, seamless brow. I just,
oh Lord, give me that gift.
No, I could be wrong.
Give me that gift.
It does say Jesus became angry, but he didn't, you know, I know I still sin in my anger. So
sure.
I try not to be, you know, blah, blah, blah,
sure.
blah. But anyway, I'm not by any means saying I've arrived or anything, but
right.
I know I'm different.
Well, and I think about David and how he processed in, you know, his Psalms, in the Psalms, for us to read his processing. And it is messy. Sometimes
agreed.
I'm like, what do you mean this man? He's asking God to blot out someone's bloodline. Like, you're
it's
saying
hardcore,
he's a man after God's own heart, but he's processing that openly, transparently with God. So that he can then come to the conclusion that is God's will for his life. One of them that is my favorite, and especially in this work scenario that you're talking about, I think it's Psalm 139. It ends with, "Search me, God, know my heart, test me, know my anxious ways, know my
anxious thoughts,
and lead me in an everlasting way."
Okay.
Okay, so right before that, though, when you read it, he is ranting about other people. He's like, why are they this, and they should be that? But search me, God.
Uh-huh.
Know my heart. Test me. Know when I'm anxious. Know when I'm messing it up. And lead me in the way, the everlasting way. So it's okay mm-hmm. if we rant. It's okay if we have this discordant experience in our human life. But where do we land? do we land with and smite them, which David often did, but, or, you know, search me. How can I engage in this right. reflecting you and not my own selfish ambition or vain conceit? And so anyways, that's Psalm always whenever it's a work problem, but you land at, where do you land, you know? And then somebody might see you and say, why did he interact with that differently? Kind of like you heard in Sarah's voice or in those other examples to you. You're like, there's something different here. And then they might ask you that question someday.
I'm prepared to give the reason for the hope that I have to anyone ask me.
There you go.
And I'm committed to doing it with gentleness and respect.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And teaching others to do the same.
Yes, it's really fun to do.
Amazing. Well, very excited about this blended families group. So if anybody is listening and is curious about that or anything that can be shared here, because there's a lot. There's the dark times. There's the family stuff. There's the, you know, just the divine orchestration of all of life. Those are all big things. So if anybody is hearing this and like, gosh, I would like to talk about that, learn about that, explore, question that, we're here for you. Grace, we have a Unscripted, we have an email. You can email us at unscripted@graceohio.org. We can get you in touch with Ken directly or anybody on staff. Yeah, because I think this is good stuff. And I really appreciate your transparency because not all this is easy to let the world know on a microphone.
But it's true. It happened. It's fine.
That's true. That's true. Well, and something I'll say, because I have become friends with you and Sarah over the years, and one thing I witnessed before I ever really even knew you guys is your worship during church. Yes. It is a visible display of honor and glory to God, because if anybody has ever sat near them, you will see them dancing, praising, hands raised, knowing every word, getting into it. You go to concerts all the time. So I am wildly curious to hear. We have our Grace Unscripted worship playlist. What song do you want to add to our playlist?
If it's not already on there, I'd like to add Highlands.
Ooh, good one.
I appreciate the preparing for the heartache to come. Mm. And we had just that song's truth of in the highs and the heartache, God's still God. And every time I hear that song, I choose in that moment when there's another tragic loss in the family, deciding now, that song is, reminds my soul of, we're choosing now that we're in on Jesus. Like, we're choosing now when the fan gets hit, we're in, we're already in. Mm-hmm. There's no turning back. So in the highlands and the heartache, all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we walk through, wherever we are, we know that Jesus is there. He's sitting right here with us.
Sure.
And we know his name can move mountains wherever we are. If you want to get technical with physical moving mountains, you can go have that debate with geologists. But I've literally seen, I've seen spiritual mountains get moved in people.
Mm-hmm.
People's miraculous healing. I've seen a friend accept Jesus who was the lead hoodlum that I ran, the lead shenanigan maker, and who I prayed for over 10 years, thinking this was a waste of breath. And end of the world YouTube video rabbit holes got him asking questions. And because God's word is real and alive, and I've been consuming it for, at that point, 15 years, I was able to answer a lot of his questions with, I'm not sure, but I know the Bible says. You know, I don't know, but I know the word with what Jesus said. And we ended that two-hour conversation on a fishing boat with, whoever confesses with their lips Jesus is Lord and believes in their heart God raised him from the dead will be saved. And his words were, I believe that.
Oh, amen. And on a fishing boat. How poetic.
And then a week later, has a serious health infection and he literally got to experience the falsehood of the prosperity gospel, the health, wealth thing. Mm-hmm. Less than a week later, he's asking me to pray for him because he's not sure if he's got a serious health thing and needs to go this way. So good thing we showed him the real gospel, not mm-hmm. the, hey, if you accept Jesus, you won't have any problems ever again.
Right.
So I shared the real one with him. Well, and he knew to come to, I need prayer for this.
Yes.
And
so that's
it was
quick.
Really cool.
That's a quick realization.
Really cool.
Talking
with the guy, he knew more than he let on. I think he knew more than he let on. He knew more about Jesus than he really let on.
Well, and in your song then, wrapping back into
that. Oh, yeah, that was about a song,
I mean, but that's a real-life application because there's two truths here. One, that when I'm on the mountain and when I'm in the valley, I can praise you, and I should praise you, and I will praise you. So that's in the valley. You've seen some valleys, and you've seen some valleys without Jesus.
Yeah.
You didn't have him to praise or to cry out to, and now you have valleys that you do have him to praise and to cry out to, and mountains that you can give glory to him and not yourself. Right. And then the other truth there is that whether you're in the shadow or you're in the light, his presence is not changed. His power is not changed. So he is there in the highlands and in the valleys, and your praise can be there in the highlands and the valleys. And when those two things come together, that's really the sweetest spot. That's like the glimpse of heaven that you can have on earth.
Yeah. So that song through 20, you know, we think we started playing it here at Grace maybe 2020. And then in early 2021, a friend of mine, withhold his name, but he had done some discipleship after Sarah and I got married. And he was helping me really understand theologically, like why theology, sound doctrine is important. Literally, that was why is sound doctrine important? And he suddenly passed away due to his daughter died tragically, and when he found out, he died.
Yeah.
So we sang that song a lot.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It didn't really even make me feel any better.
Yeah.
It's making me cry now, 5 years later. But I've had that on a loop to... through my teeth, praising Jesus.
Yeah.
That he let him die. That he let his daughter die. Wasn't expecting that, but excuse me.
That's a valley. That's a valley for sure.
So that was literally the song that I'm going to sing this one. And just had that on repeat because I didn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
Let me listen to Nirvana.
That doesn't take you out of the pit, I'll tell you that much.
So it just over on a loop.
I read recently that praise and prayer is like a magnifying glass. God can't get bigger, but we can take a magnifying glass and put it in front of him, and our perception of him gets bigger, gets closer, gets,
I like that.
You feel that, you see that, and he doesn't change. He's no less God within the shadow. And no less faithful when things get hard, but we can tune in, we can praise, and we can cry out, we can have prayer to draw ourselves closer toward him and give us perspective like that.
I agree. That's the song, so hope it's not on the playlist.
Even if it is, we'll add another
put the acoustic version.
The raw, real, unscripted version.
And it was really sweet to hear Benjamin William Hastings sing that in person, since he's the writer. And you mentioned we go to concerts. We were sure to see him since he wrote one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I mean, he just plagiarizes the Bible.
It's so true. As you read Psalms, you're like, wait a minute, this sounds like all the worship songs we sing.
But he's really, really good at plagiarizing the
Bible. It's so good. It's so good. No.
I'd love to meet him and thank him for his work.
Well, thank you.
I do that by buying his music.
There you go. I'm sure he appreciates that. Well, guys, again, thanks for listening. Thanks, Ken, for sharing this story. If you have thoughts, questions, comments, reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. Ken, just thanks for putting this out for everybody to hear your testimony so that they can know Jesus better as a result.
Amen. I pray they do.